before they deployed and had heard a few hymns sung rather badly, and the chaplain say a few prayers.
Join me, Joan Bakewell, to hear Richard Dannett talk about belief this Christmas Eve at 9:25 on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and also online. Just gone 1 o'clock. Time for the news from Ian Skelly.
Rail passengers in southwest England and Wales are being advised not to travel unless it's absolutely necessary, as heavy rain continues to disrupt road and rail networks. 4 severe flood warnings, which mean there's a risk to life, are in place in Devon and Cornwall, where rivers have burst their banks and dozens of homes have had to be evacuated. More rain is forecast for this afternoon. The Association of Chief Police Officers has denied that the relationship between the police and politicians is worsening following the resignation of Andrew Mitchell as Chief Whip. 2 people, including a serving armed police officer, have been arrested as part of the inquiry into the confrontation between Mr. Mitchell and officers in Downing Street. They claim he called them plebs, something he insists is untrue. Police in Delhi have fired tear gas and water cannons at thousands of people protesting against the gang rape and torture of a 23-year-old woman. The attack on the medical student in the city last Sunday has prompted demonstrations across India calling for better protection from violence for women. Voting is taking place in Egypt in the second round of a referendum on a controversial draft constitution. Unofficial results after last week's first round showed 57% of those who voted were in favour of the proposals. Police in Tyneside say a man was stabbed to death last night while walking home from a pub with his girlfriend. The attack happened in South Shields. The victim, who was 25, was involved in a row with 2 youths who then ran away. David Cameron has tweeted a message to Lady Thatcher saying he wishes her a speedy recovery. The former Prime Minister, who's 87, is recuperating in hospital after an operation to remove a growth from her bladder. The Duke and Duchess of Cambridge are to spend Christmas at the Middleton family home in Berkshire rather than with the Queen in Sandringham. The decision was taken before it was announced that the Duchess was pregnant. And the weather, it'll be dull and wet for most places this afternoon, with the heaviest rain in the southwest, leading to a risk of flooding. It'll be windy everywhere, with gales in the northeast of Scotland. And that's the BBC News and the weather. It's 2.5 minutes past one.
And now for the first of this weekend's early music shows, presented today by Catherine Bott.
It's carol singing season, and Christmas carols are in the news, as Pope Benedict's new book pronounces the whole idea to have been based on a misunderstanding. Apparently, if the angels never actually sang to the shepherds, there's no point in people bawling out while shepherds watch their flocks by night. But you can't keep a good tradition down, and anyway, once upon a time in the first millennium AD, it was the Christian church which appropriated those ancient dance songs that were a staple of the pagan winter solstice, as it rebranded the solstice as Christmas. By the Middle Ages, the word carol meant a song with a refrain or burden. Carols were often forced marriages of words and well-known tunes, and most of them had texts connected with Advent, Christmas, or Epiphany. Not by any means all, as we'll learn, but let's start with a carol about St. Stephen, whose feast is on December the 26th.
Ea Mater Stephane, rai forus ve praetude. Of this Mater Maque men, Stephane, rai forus ve praetude.
That was the 15th century carol Ea Martyr Stephane, performed by Alamire, directed by Dr. David Skinner. All the music in today's programme comes from Alamire's new recording of carols from a 600-year-old parchment. It's called the Trinity Carol Roll, because it's kept at Trinity College, Cambridge, in the Wren Library, and it's the earliest surviving source of English polyphonic carols. I've come to Trinity to learn all about this historic collection from Alamire's director, David Skinner, who's also director of music at Sydney Sussex College across the road. Together, we're going to unroll the roll. The roll is unrolled, and the biggest surprise, this is really rather stupid of me, is that it's written out lengthways. So the notes and the words of each carol are sideways on. When it's in its case, it's helpfully labelled. So we have, from left to right, Hail Mary full of grace, Noel Noel, Alma Redemptoris Mater, and so on. But in order actually to attempt to sing from the thing, I've got to turn sideways on.
It extends about 2 metres when fully rolled out, and we think it's about 18 centimetres wide, and you can see the basically 3 bits of parchment sewn together to make it all up.
In zigzag stitch, I should say.
Yes, it's beautiful, isn't it?
Very neat.
This sheepskin has remained dormant for a long time.
Is it all in one hand?
It seems to be. It doesn't seem to be very elegant in terms of design. This is really simply a record of 13 carols. And it's certainly the earliest source of the English polyphonic carol that we have to survive.
Thank you.
For modern viewers of the Trinity Carol Roll, when it's in its cabinet and fully opened out, it very kindly labels each carol as you go on from left to right. And first is the carol we've just heard, Hail Mary, Full of Grace, Hail Mary, Full of Grace. David Skinner, what brings you over from Sydney, Sussex, to
good
be allowed
question.
To record
really
it?
Good question, considering that Trinity is an extremely musical college. I've known the librarian, David McKittrick, here for many years, and he knows my work with Alamire, and of course, we tend to record music from the later 15th century to the early 17th century, so it's not really something we normally do. But David very kindly asked me to come over and have a look at it, because for many years he wanted it on record.
And you're not just saying that because he's standing in between us, are you? So I've got two Davids. David McKittrick, can you tell me very briefly how this glorious old parchment came to be in this equally glorious but much more recent Wren Library?
Well, the library was finished in the late 17th century, so you're absolutely right that this difference between the age of the manuscript and the age of the building, but it's one of about 1,000 or so medieval manuscripts we've got. And this came to us in the later part of the 19th century. And we've had it rolled up for many, many years. And it's always been one of my ambitions ever since I became librarian here that we should be able to share it with people and, of course, share it by making a recording. Now, as David Skinner was just saying a moment ago, we have got a very strong musical tradition here, but it's a different kind of musical tradition. And so I've been casting around in Cambridge and amongst students, actually, of the college to see when we would be able to find the right group of people who would be able to come together and record this series of 13 carols.
Mumbai was singing as it is, for Pulernatus est nobis. This patus that rule is born, wonderful work as hath he wrought. Will not less that was he, Lord, but boldly a guide it croft, and thus it is, for so the ways, asketh not what that is his, but that is his. Do my west sing and die.
I was singing and Pray for Us, the Prince of Peace, performed by Alamire, directed by David Skinner, who's with me here at Trinity College, Cambridge, with the Trinity Carol Roll spread out in front of us. David, now our job now is to go to the penultimate carol. So I'm skedaddling, and so are you, a little to the right. And yes, here we have, in modern English, Pray for Us, the Prince of Peace. Can we actually deconstruct it a bit to see how on earth you would sing from this role. You wouldn't really, would you, expect to
not,
do that?
No, not really. It's not like a choir book or part books or even anything in score, even though this is in score. You can't really see it quite clearly, but it is. So there are two parts here. Here's one part, and it carries on right there. You have to skip a line of music, and it carries on there. The second part is there. You know, it's basically in score format, isn't it? However, only the first verse is set for the singers. So Pray For Us is right in the middle of these yes. four staves. And yes, you could. A good singer could follow the underlay quite clearly. But when you get to verse two, problems begin to arise. And you can see the remaining verses are below in a paragraph. And each verse is headed with a lovely coloured initial, blue, then red, then blue again. And the problem is that this music isn't metrically regular. So every single verse has to be reset according to the meter. So the note values will change. Sometimes you'll have an anacrusis, sometimes you won't. So really, this is just a record of these 13 carols. It probably never would have been performed from. So therefore, it's a portable document. You can roll it up, you can keep it safe, and it's there for a record. If you wanted to perform from it, presumably you'd have to transcribe it into a modern working edition or an early 15th century edition.
Yes, because singers of old sacred music, and one gets quite used to accommodating the fact that the text isn't underlaid and the notes are somewhere else in your field of vision.
That's true.
But if the meter's going to keep changing, and if the writing is as teeny as this is, it's obvious that it's not practical. It's a thing of great beauty.
But also, when you hear the carols, you can see that, I mean, the carol is a very formulaic form. It's actually a literary form. By the early 15th century, it was the most popular literary form in England. And most carols, in fact, survive without any music whatsoever. It's just the text. Many carols survive with just a single monophonic tune, a single melody. This is why this is so important. It's polyphonic. So therefore meant for a completely different class of musician, a different class of singer, very much high society.
Where does it come from?
Sadly, we don't know. When we recorded it, we had the opportunity to have it photographed. And David McKittrick took it to the Photographic Centre in Cambridge, and they were trying to lift out some of the ink at the beginning of the roll, which we think gives us some indication of what the roll is for, where it came from. There's a lot of very enticing red squiggles, but nothing can be lifted, sadly. All we know is that it must date from after 1415 because there's the Agincourt Carol. Of course, the campaign was in the summer of 1415, so the roll cannot date from before that time. Literary scholars have looked at the language and they can detect a Norfolk accent in the literature. So we think it hails from Norfolk or thereabouts, or the scribe was from Norfolk.
What tidings bringest thou, messenger? Of Christ's birth is Jonas done. A babe is born of his nature, the prince of pest that ever shall be, of hell and of her hath the cure. His lordship is eternity. Such wonder tidings, yea, my hair, that man is mad, no God despair, whom sin had marred, but fingers cry. What tidings bringest thou, messenger? Of Christ's birth is Jonas die. A wound a thing is mould a fall, that king that formed star and soon. Heaven and earth and angels all, no human king is new begun. Such wonder tears in my hair, the font is new of own a year, that hath been ever.
You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, in Cambridge to look at the Trinity Carol Roll. Details of all the music in today's programme can be found on our page of the Radio 3 website. With me in the Wren Library at Trinity is David Skinner, who's director of Alamire, the group that's recorded every single one of the 13 carols on the Trinity Roll. David, how did the medieval carol differ from other kinds of music being sung during the period? What makes it unique? Is it unique?
In terms of high art music, there are two basic forms. It's going to be secular or sacred. This really falls, of course, in the secular category, even though the texts are religious. And it's simply because the texts are not liturgical. They are not meant to be sung in church. They're meant to be sung in a great hall, in a courtyard, in a private household. This is private entertainment, or possibly music to accompany a morality play or a disguising that we know that the king's choristers took part in from time to time.
Were they also a way of telling the stories of Christianity, rather like stained glass windows?
Yes, I mean, it must be remembered, carols are not just for Christmas. You have carols that punctuate the calendar through to Easter and beyond. It just so happens this particular role, most of the carols are for Christmas, or they fall within the octave of Christmas. There are only just a few that are of themes of just generally to the Virgin Mary or some general moral theme.
Well, you have included on the CD a couple of carols that aren't on the roll.
That's right.
They're beautiful, yep. And they point up a contrast. Mm-hmm. The one we're going to play next is Lullay Lullay.
That's beautiful. Most beautiful.
Why did you choose that?
Well, the Trinity Carol Roll, sadly, only fills about 45 minutes worth of music. So the 13 carols we executed, we recorded all of the verses, so it is as complete a recording as we could possibly have made. The fillers, so to speak, come from the same tradition. So we picked other polyphonic carols from the same period, but also some monophonic carols. So those carols that aren't harmonized, it's just a single line. And certainly Lullay Lullay, to me, is the most beautiful of them all. And it's a story of the Virgin Mother and the baby Christ child in conversation.
Thank you.
Lulay Lulay, sung by Claire Wilkinson, with Pamela Thorby playing a gemshorn and Andrew Lawrence King, the psaltery. David Skinner, I'm rather falling in love all over again with Middle English. Give me a potted guide so that I can go home and talk it to my family.
Well, that's exactly what I asked our vocal coach, Christopher Page. He explained it so clearly to us. The vowels that we have today, A, E, I, O, U, before the great vowel shift, the mid-15th century, were very Italianate or Latinized, so A, E, I, O, U. So basically, you replace all the diphthong vowels with the Latinized vowels, and when it comes to consonants, on the whole, you pronounce what you see. So, for example, knight in shining armor, that word comes to us with surprising results. So rather than knight, it'd be neat, but you'd pronounce the K, kn, and then the end, kt, knicht.
Knicht in
precisely.
Shining armor.
Armor. In shining armor. See? So you just replace the vowels. But of course, you know, there are certain variables, and Christopher very kindly gave those to us.
David, this music is very varied and colourful. A lot of people think that really old music is all going to be plain song, but this is very different, isn't it? It's isosyllabic in many
places. It is, and that was my worry, to be honest. I mean, in terms of looking at the role as its line here, a musicologist could look at this and quite safely say, I just need three singers to make this work. However, I think the texture of the same three singers taking part and then one person dropping out from time to time doesn't make for good entertainment. And I'm sure that was the same in medieval times. So we had to spice it up. We simply added one more singer, so soprano, so I could then vary the texture. It could be soprano, alto, tenor, or alto, tenor and bass.
Thank you.
two carols there. The second, Noel Noel, played by harpist Andrew Lawrence King and plectrum lute player Michael Grebel. And we've already heard the playing of Pamela Thorby on the recorder. Now, David, use of instruments in this repertoire is rather contentious, isn't it?
It is. There are two reasons why we used instruments. The first, I mean, for me, was practical, because I think we needed to add colour to each carol, and each carol has a different colour, a different flavour to it, and I wanted to reflect that in the instrumentation. Second reason is, I'm personally convinced that instruments were used, and I think that is because of the iconography of the time, but also of some accounts that I've come across in my research. There's a very interesting one, at Stoke by Clare, a college, a very, very musical college, from 1422. And it's around the time of this role. And in the statutes, it says that the dean shall compel his musical brethren during divine office to sing or play instruments so they be not idle during divine office. So I can't see a clearer explanation than that there. I mean, the words used in the same sentence, instruments, divine office, to play, it just makes sense. But also, I say it, the proof is in the pudding. It just works so beautifully.
Something that I always enjoy if I'm singing in the congregation at Christmas is that wonderful mixture of languages. So we sing In Dulce Jubilo, and the verse continues in English. Is that represented here? You can...
Oh, yes. I mean, usually at the end of a verse, or sometimes in the burden, you find Latin tags are inserted. And the tags are very much familiar Latin that would have been known to the laity. And the final carol, the very, very famous There Is No Rose, you have a Latin tag after every verse, Transeamus.
Res Miranda.
Yes, precisely. What's interesting about combining Latin, or liturgical Latin in inverted commas, and English, the vernacular, is to show that the secular and the sacred worlds were never that far apart.
As is the rose that bar Jesus.
There is no rose of such virtu, performed by Alamire, directed by David Skinner, who's with me in Trinity College. Well, we can't leave the role without drawing attention to this famous, decidedly non-Christmas, rather jingoistic carol, Deo Gratias Anglia, the Agincourt carol, and I'm sticking to Agincourt. Why is it here? What's it doing on this roll?
Well, no one knows. This is the only musical report of Henry V's campaign at Agincourt. Of course, there are a number of chronicles, both in Latin and English, that recount the story, but this is the only musical one. And this is the earliest version of that carol here in the Trinity Carol Roll. It lies at the physical heart of the roll, too, right in the center of the roll, which makes one wonder whether they were very keen to preserve it. Because, of course, you look at the ends of the rolls, and they're quite tattered, because they'd been exposed more than those bits in the middle that had been rolled up. But in any case, it's a fascinating account of Henry's victory over the French, and that rousing patriotic cry, Deo Gratias, is, I think, one of the best burdens in the entire Trinity Carol Roll. And it's certainly the finest composition, I believe. It's a shame it's anonymous.
Is the Trinity Carol Roll unique?
It is, yeah, it is now. In its day, it probably wasn't. I mean, there are records certainly in inventories of music in roll form. And it was a very convenient way to carry the music around. You could roll it up, stick it in your bag, roll it back out again. But because it wasn't bound and loose such as this, they were lost or the parchment used for other purposes. So this is indeed a rare survivor.
Well, sadly, after our conversation, it's time to roll it up and put it back in its case. Could I ask the librarian of the Wren Library, David McKittrick, will you do the honours and roll it up carefully while we keep out of the way?
And now we've got to roll it back up again. It lives in a little tube well away, but we've had it on show for several months now, and we'll be leaving it out on show in the library for people to come and have a look at if they want to in Trinity College, Cambridge, for the whole of January. So please come and have a look and see for yourself this extraordinary survival.
As David McKittrick rolls up the Trinity Carol Roll again, my hearty thanks to him and also to David Skinner, and admiration to David Skinner's ensemble Alamire for the gorgeous recording of the contents of the Trinity Carol Roll. The singers are soprano Grace Davidson, contralto Claire Wilkinson, who studied here at Trinity, and tenors Nicholas Todd and Simon Wall, with instrumentalists Andrew Lawrence King, Michael Grebul, and Pamela Thorby. Here's Alamire to play us out with the Agincourt carol, Deo Gratias Anglia, our king went forth to Normandy with grace and might of chivalry.
Deo Gratias Anglia, rede Shiva.
Gratias Anglia, the Agincourt Carol, performed by Alamire, directed by David Skinner, and taken from their recording of the complete music on the medieval Trinity Carol Roll. Today's Early Music Show was presented by Catherine Bott and produced in Salford by Chris Wines. And in tomorrow's programme, Lucy Skeeping will be playing music from a concert performed by the Society of Strange and Ancient Instruments, which was recorded earlier this month at the Royal Northern College of Music in Manchester. So that's at the same time, just after 1 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3. And don't forget, you can visit the Radio 3 website for free downloads of the programme.
One of the highlights of 2012 on Radio 3 was our complete broadcast of Wagner's Ring Cycle, live from the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden. You may have found the prospect of total immersion in those gargantuan spans of music a bit daunting. So over the Christmas period, we've made the experience more easily digestible, we hope, by giving you a one-act-sized parcel of the ring to open each day, beginning on Christmas Eve. The Royal Opera's Ring was one of the hottest tickets of the year, despite the Olympics, and the cast is headed by Bryn Terfel, described as captivating, compelling, and enthralling as Wotan, the chief of the gods. Wagner's Ring Cycle, in the production from the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, act by act over Christmas, beginning on Christmas Eve at 4:30 on BBC Radio 3.
And now a second chance to hear last Monday's lunchtime concert at Wigmore Hall in London. It's introduced by Sarah Walker.
Welcome to Wigmore Hall, where the stage is looking a little different today. Instead of the usual full-size grand piano, we have a forte piano, and it's going to be played by Christian de Zuidenhout, the South African-born virtuoso who gained international recognition at the age of 21 when he won the first prize and the audience prize at the prestigious Bruges forte piano competition. He's going to play three works by Mozart, the Sonata in B-flat, K333, the variations on Gluck's Unser Dummel Purbelmeint, that's K455, and to start, the Prelude and Fugue in C, K394. Well, this work reveals quite a lot about Mozart's life in the 1780s. Firstly, he'd studied the fugues of Handel and Bach, encouraged by Baron von Swieten, the director of the Viennese court library, who sent him various scores. And secondly, Mozart's wife, Constanze, was a great lover of fugues. When her husband improvised them at the keyboard, she would beg him to get them down on paper, so perhaps we should thank her for the music we're about to hear. Well, here comes Christian de Zuidenhout onto the Wigmore Hall stage to perform Mozart's Prelude and Fugue in C, K394.